This is PCJ Radio International. PCJ Radio International presents the longest-running international show, The Happy Station Show, produced and presented by Keith Pehon.
Well, good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Welcome again to another edition of your program, Happy Station Show, from PCJ Radio International. It's very nice to have you with me today on the 27th of, I was going to say September, but it's not, July. I don't know what I'm thinking of. I'm ahead of myself today by 2 months, actually. Anyway, yes, we have a fun show today. We're going to be hearing from none other than Johnny Mann, who created the Johnny Mann Singers. He's going to be joining us on the program, and we're going to be taking a listen to some of his most memorable recordings at the same time. We also have some information regarding our transmissions to Southeast and East Asia, which I'll tell you about at the end of the program. But first, I thought we'd begin with a little bit of Neil Simone. Neil Simone? You see what's wrong with me today? My dyslexia is just kicking in left, right, and middle. Oh, sorry, left, right, and center. Nina Simone, that is, with I Put a Spell on You.
I put a spell on you. Cause you're mine. Do, 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 do. You better stop the things you do. I ain't lying. No, I ain't lying. You know I can't stand it. You're running around. You know better, Daddy. I can't stand it 'cause you put me down. Yeah, yeah. I put a spell on you. Because you're mine.
Nina Simone, I Put a Spell on You, a song actually that has been featured in many, many films, as well as TV commercials. But at this very moment, I can't think of what commercials they were. If you do, you can let me know. All right. You are listening to the Happy Station Show from PCJ Radio International. Over the years, there have been a number of easy listening and vocal groups. One of the most famous, of course, of all time is Ray Conniff and his singers and orchestra. But around the same time that Ray Conniff came on the scene, a few years later, another gentleman started a group that became just as popular. In fact, they probably had more radio airplay than Ray Conniff, due to the fact that they recorded radio jingles for radio stations the world over. In the United States, also here in Taiwan at one point, and also for Armed Forces Radio. I'm speaking of Johnny Mann. Yes, Johnny Mann and the Johnny Mann Singers are a special guest on today's edition of Happy Station. You've had such a long career in music, and it always amazes me. People that have been in the business for such a long time have seen this transition from the music industry being run by people who love music to it being run by accountants and lawyers. In the day that you started, was starting in music, was this something that happened by accident? Were you just a keen piano player as a kid, or was it a conscious decision to say, you know, I want to go into music?
Well, those words actually didn't come out of my mouth, and they didn't come out of my mother's mouth, meaning I want my son to play, to become a musician. But she was, my mother was a conservatory graduate from the Peabody Conservatory. She played organ and piano. She taught, and she taught voice, and she produced stage shows with her being musical director. So when I was a child, she... First of all, I was in a choir at the age of five, and I had a little boys, a boys' choir, boys and men, no ladies, and I just sang in choirs all my life until I got out of the Army. One church, whatever church it was, and I'd sing in a choir, and then go to the next, wherever it was, and sing in the choir. And that developed my love of choral music, of course. I didn't actually set out to be a musician, because my mom wanted me to play heavy piano, and I didn't want to play that. I wanted to play football. And she, bless her heart, she said, sit down. So I sat down and did my piano stuff, and then in high school, I heard Tommy Dorsey orchestra music and dance band music, And I said, gee, what's that? I heard an instrument. She said, that's a trombone. I said, I got to have a trombone. So I got a trombone, took a few lessons, and because I already knew music, I started playing in bands in school. Right away, you were in the school marching band or symphonic band, or whatever kind of band they had at the school. And that helped me play in orchestras around Baltimore. Baltimore, Maryland was my original home, and I went to school there, just to high school. I only went through high school because then I went right into doing music and playing trombone and singing, and I had my first vocal group, and I played bass, stand-up bass for a number of years for fun and did it. So I just became a part of music, or music became a part of me, and I pursued it then when I went in the Army and came out of the Army. I was in the big Army band in Washington, D.C., because I lived in Baltimore. We concertized all over the world, 10 countries of Europe. It was a very prestigious organization. It wasn't just a marching band that marches down the street. It's a It was a 90-piece symphonic band, 30 voice male chorus, and I came out of the Army and decided I wanted to be in big music, and big music was either New York or Los Angeles.
It sounds like, for example, when you were learning to play the music instruments and discovering your love for music, that it was sort of like you were almost like a jack of all trades. You were a choral singer, you were playing piano, and then you were playing bass, and then you were playing trombone.
It just, because of the interest, popped up for me. I was in my first vocal group, had a pianist who was a better jazz player than I was. So I had my trombone, of course. And then we had a guy who played saxophone and a girl who sang and brushed drums. But there wasn't room. Trombone didn't fit there. So I said, well, instead of trombone and a sax and piano, I'd switch and use bass and have the rhythm section be a little better. So I did that.
When you joined the industry in New York and Los Angeles, it was very different at that time. Would you say that when any musician at that period, including yourself, were joining the music industry, it was a lot easier than it, say, is today?
Well, I wouldn't say that it was easier. It's just so different. Nowadays, or even in those early years of mine, the 60s and the 70s, pop rock and rock and roll music was making more young people jump into music. But I got into recording right off the bat and writing because I was a choral guy. I was a vocal writer, arranger. I wrote for movies and things like that where I wrote the scores, the orchestrations as well. But I was primarily a vocal guy.
Mm-hmm.
So I had my first vocal group, and I got a job on the NBC Comedy Hour, four guys and four girls, I being one of the guys. And we did that for about 2 years. And then I met the first pro singers I ever knew. And I just made a demo record, and I took it into newly formed Liberty Records and showed it to them. And they said, okay, we'll make you our vocal group.
When you were arranging and writing choral arrangements, was there any influence on the groups from the 1940s, like the Modernaires and others? Did that have an influence on you?
Well, when I started off singing, my first vocal group in Baltimore was a girl and three of us guys, like the Modernaires or the Pied Pipers or any of those four and five voice vocal groups. That was influenced because that was popular at the time. And that's what I did, only I got into studio work when I got my Liberty contract, because the different people they had, different artists they had, I backed them up as backup. Mm-hmm. I mean, the producers took me and said, okay, get eight voices on this recording and whatever it is.
If there's anything that you want, if there's anything I can do, just call on me and I'll send it along with love from me to you. I've got everything that you want, like a heart that's oh so true. Just call on me and I'll send it along with love from me to you. I got arms that long to hold you and keep you by my side. I got lips that long to kiss you and keep you satisfied. If there's anything that you want, if there's anything I can do, just call on me and I'll send it along with love from me to you. I got arms that long to hold you and keep you by my side. I got lips that long to kiss you and keep you satisfied. If there's anything that you want, if there's anything I can do, just call on me and I'll send it along with love from me to you. With love from me to you. With love from me to you.
So when you were working, let's say, with Frank Sinatra or any of the others, and let's say the musical director was, let's say, Nelson Riddle or Billy May or whoever, how closely did you work with the arranger and conductor? Did you have a lot of input and say, look, Nelson, I don't think this would work too well. I have a better idea.
No, we didn't. We had never had any conflict because, first of all, Nelson knew what he was doing, and whatever he wrote for Frank, we sang it. I don't know whether you remember "Hey Jealous Lover," Frank Sinatra's.
Yes.
I sang on that with two other guys and a girl, but we just went into the studio as pro singers and as a studio call, and they said, yeah, "Okay, we want to have this vocal group over here. John, Betty, Mary, have done that. Come on over and do this." And they give you the music, and we'd sing it and do whatever that Nelson had written for us. Mm-hmm. And that's always the way it was. There was never any conflict. If I were just doing the background with singers, I didn't write a note. I just brought, they said, we want four boys and four girls. I said, okay. So I got contracted with the singers, and we went to the studio, and they passed out the music, and we sang it.
So it sounds pretty much, when I spoke to Ray Conniff's daughter, Tara, she told me that with her father, it was almost the same thing. He was backing a lot of the singers at Columbia in the 1950s.
That's right.
And then all of a sudden, his singers and his orchestra started to record on their own.
That's right.
So with all that training that you had working with conductors like Nelson Riddle, that must have been invaluable.
Well, there was no strain to working with conductors. I didn't even talk to them unless it was something special. I'd get a call, hey, can you, we're doing a session on Tuesday night at 8 o'clock. We'll do four sides with with somebody. And I said, okay, we'll be there. And I'd book the singers, and we'd all show up, go in and do it. But we didn't have any, we didn't start working the arrangers. And the arrangers, including myself, we had that all written way before we got in the studio.
When you formed your own group, the Johnny Mann Singers, and recorded under your own name, was that something that happened by accident, or was that something that you had wanted to do after backing up other musicians for a while?
Well, that's what the first thing that happened. I got my first, I met the pro singers on the NBC Comedy Hour. And then when I made my demo record, I took it into Liberty, gave it to them, and they said, okay, we'll make you a vocal group. What's your name? I said, John Mann. They said, well, that's pretty dull. So I said, well, that's my name. They just made it Johnny. So the Johnny Mann Singers came out of it, and we've lived with that forever, ever since. But then I was an artist, quote, for Liberty Records as a singing vocal group, and started the albums, and now since then we've done 42 albums.
Now, at that time, was there any competition going on, let's say, between yourself and Ray Conniff and Anita Kerr, who also had vocal groups? Was there a competition going on between the three of you?
Well, I don't know of any competition. I knew them both, of course. In fact, I was with Ray the last couple of weeks. He was alive, just being friendly. But I knew them both. Each of us recorded with their own record company. And when anything happened at Liberty, I did it. And whenever it happened at Columbia, Ray did it. And we just did what came by. But it wasn't like, oh, the three of us are applying for a big job contract or something. None of that ever happened.
But also at the same time, all three of you had your very own distinctive sound. I mean, Ray Conniff, even if you don't, if the announcer doesn't announce the song, you know right away it's a Ray Conniff recording. The same with Anita Kerr and the same with yourself.
Yeah, that's because we all have like to write our arrangements, what we hear in our head and want to put on paper.
Now, when you went into the studio in the early 1960s to record with Cy Zenter, an album that you won a Grammy for, called The Great Band with Great Voices, that's a very interesting project because you listen to it now. When I listened to it recently, you know, sometimes a lot of music from that period, when you listen to it today, it sounds dated. That album doesn't sound dated. The new version, which has been issued on CD, it sounds like it could have been recorded just like, you know, a few months ago. The way the powerful vocal arrangements and the powerful orchestra arrangements was when you went into the record that album. How did that come about?
Well, that was Cy Zenter had a contract with Liberty Records also, and they just called and said, "Hey, we want to put a thing out and call it Great Bands with Great Voices." Johnny Mansingers and Ray and Cy Zenter, and I said, "Well, that sounds fine to me." So they gave me a list of the tunes and the lead sheets, and I wrote out the arrangement for the Johnny Mansingers, you know, Serenade in Blue, and all those good tunes. And I wrote out all the arrangements, and then I'd give them to Bob Florence. Bob Florence was an orchestrator, a young guy, who did Cy Zentner's orchestration for him. Cy was a trombone player, but he wasn't an arranger or conductor. So I'd write the vocal package and give it to Bob Florence. Bob would write the orchestration, and then we'd go into the studio and do, we did three or four tunes and knocked out 12 eventually. And that's how that combo came.
When you went into the studio to record this album with Cy that you won the Grammy for, was the intention for it to win a Grammy? Because sometimes musicians didn't know.
I didn't even know about Grammy. I'm sitting here right now looking at my wall in my office. I got five of Grammy nomination award things up there. But we didn't think Grammy. We weren't thinking Grammys in those days. First of all, they were new. Grammy Awards were brand new in those years, and we didn't go in thinking about that. We just went in to, hey, we're singing another job today.
Impossible though things may get, improbable I will forget, indelible never.
They got Joey because he would have been competition for Johnny Carson. And they got Joey Bishop, and they auditioned me. They asked me to come in and talk and see if I wanted to be the musical director. And I said, yes, I'd be pleased. And I went in and did that. And, of course, Regis came in as the announcer. And we did that for 3 years. And that was really a lot of fun.
And you also did a voice for an animated series for Alvin and the Chipmunks. You were the voice of Theodore and the musical director for that.
Well, that's right. In 1956, I signed my record contract with Liberty. 1956, the same year, Ross Bagdasarian, if you know the name, created the Chipmunks. And I knew Ross very well. He was a songwriter, an aspirant songwriter. And he made me musical director of the new Alvin and the Chipmunks television series. So I wrote all the opening music and the arrangements and orchestrations and everything for it. And I sang the voice of Theodore.
Now, I heard from people that used to do similar kind of projects at that time. Is it true that you would record it on tape at a normal speed, sing it much slower, and then speed the tape up?
That's the way it works. You record the orchestra track at 15 IPS. That's 15 per second. And then we would get the orchestras clear and clean. Then when we did that, we would drop it down to 7.5, which was, of course, half as fast. And we would record with that track, we would record the voices slow and speaking out, you know, Alvin, all real spoken, overly enunciated. When that was clean, then they brought it up back up to normal speed. The orchestra came back to normal, and the chipmunk voices went up on the boy, and that's where the chipmunks came from.
That sounds so complicated when you think about the new technology today, where you don't even have to do it that way.
No, you don't. No, that was great. That's the hard way. You just had to do it. But nowadays, you can do that all with your computer.
Yeah, yeah. Another milestone in your long career was when you recorded a cover version of a song made popular by the Fifth Dimension, "Up, Up and Away," which became a hit in the United Kingdom. And in fact, I mean, a lot of our listeners in the UK, when I told a few of them that I was going to have you on the show, said, "Oh, yes, Up, Up and Away, we remember that."
Yeah.
How did you choose that song?
Well, I didn't. Liberty Records chose it. And they said, "Why don't you do a recording?" And I did it here, and it became very big here in the United States. But the Fifth Dimension had the original. But then, I'd unbeknownst to me, I didn't even know it, Keith, that they took it to Europe, I mean to United Kingdom, and in England it became number one. And I don't know how that happened, but it did.
Would you like to ride?
Start to guide us. If by some chance you find yourself loving me,
some people don't realize this, but if you tune in to radio stations anywhere in the world, you're bound to pick up at some point the Johnny Mansingers singing a station ID.
Quite possible.
So this was this the kind of thing where a radio station said, look, we want you to have you record an ID for us, and all of a sudden it was like a snowball effect.
That's right. It started off
very small. And
That's exactly what happened. We started right here in Hollywood with KFWB Channel 98. We did that first. Then we went over to Bill Drake. Do you know the name?
Yes.
Bill Drake was a broadcast consultant for radio stations. And he put me, and I did a 93 KHJ for KHJ mm-hmm. Radio in Los Angeles. And then he took that and spread it around, and we became where he was the radio consultant, and he would only use me doing the jingles. So I did all my jingles, most of my jingles at the time, through Drake, including the ones we did for Australia and Hamburg, Germany, and Honolulu, and a couple of different places. Taiwan.
Even here in Taiwan, yes, that's right. Now, when you recorded these jingles for radio stations, how did you write the arrangements? Would you try to find out from the station first what is it that they wanted first, or would you have some let's say standard ones that you'd record and just include the ID of that station in it?
No, they were all originals. And when a station called, first of all, their call letters were different than anybody else's call letters, so I knew I had to make a logo with the call letters in it, and then they'd say. Our thing is KRTH Los Angeles, and right now I've been doing K-Earth jingles. They call it K-Earth, but it's KRTH. So and we did K-Earth 101 or 90, yeah, K-Earth 101 Los Angeles, and we did that. We've been doing that for 18 years. But when they would usually say, we want to say the logo and Merry Christmas, the logo and then the name of a jock. And you'd know all the jock names from K-Earth, and I mean from KHJ. What's his name? Robert W. Morgan, and all those broadcasters that were famous nationally. And they were all KHJ guys at the time and K-Earth guys. And they'd give me a name or they'd give me a short line that they wanted. You know, it's a bright morning on K-Earth 101, whatever. And then I just write the music to it and record it.
So when you work in a studio then, do you have everything prepared before you go to the studio? Or you have everything prepared, but when you're in the studio, you make changes?
No. I write the music out, of course. I create it and write all the music out and just make copies for the singers. And we go in and sing it. They don't change anything unless they decide in the session to do something a little differently. But they usually don't do that. It's not a good idea. Although I can do it, and I've done it before in the past, but very, very rarely. I come in, they give me a list of 20 jingles, and I'll write out the jingles, and then I'll talk to the guy on the phone and say, here's what it's going to sound like. KRT 101. They say, okay, that's great. And then I do that for all of them, and then we go into the studio and record them.
I'd like to tell you about a remarkable radio station.
Hello, baby!
Oh, the great oldies.
K-Earth 101. Wow. I know you love me.
I'm the real Don Steele, and you're a K-Earth winner, 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 winner.
K-Earth 101. R-E-S-P-E-C-T.
Oldies Radio. K-Earth 101.
The best oldies, K-Earth 101.
So the vocalist that you have, how do you pick the vocalist?
The singer?
Do you have, is there like...
You mean the singers?
Yeah, the singers. Yeah, is there like a database of singers that just record with different vocal groups, and you call them up, or do you have your own regulars?
No, you have you develop people that you work with most of the time, depending on the size of the group. I mean, if they only want four singers, you get so and so. If you need if they ask for seven singers, you get so and so. You know, and but now most of my jingles in the last bunch of years have been with, in fact, almost, well, all of the jingles we did, with one of the, I got an exception, were six voices, two girls and four boys. But the last, let's say, 18 years or so, it's been three boys, three girls, and three boys, mm-hmm. Three and three. And I just write the parts for that. But right. One of the big things that started the jingles going was The Sound of the City, which I wrote as like an alma mater song for KSFO San Francisco.
Right.
And that was very big. And then with the success of that, I wrote Sound of the City, which is a whole song. The Sound of the City for San Francisco, San Diego, Los Angeles, Chicago, Miami, a whole bunch of song places.
KFRC, San Francisco, the Big 610, KFRC.
Listening to America's number one music station.
93 KSJ, Los Angeles.
Who's getting down the street?
Johnny Mann and Windy, and that was our guest today, Johnny Mann of the Johnny Mann Singers, on today's edition of Happy Station. All right, let's take a moment now to talk about the transmissions that we do on Sundays to Southeast and East Asia, which, by the way, are picked up in many other parts of the world. The next transmission, of course, is July 28th, and we have a fun show on that, as always. But the show that I would really pay attention to is the one that we have coming up on August the 4th, Sunday on August the 4th, from 1330 to 1430 UTC on 11835. We're going to call the show Happy Station Meets Border Crossings, because the show itself will be done from Washington, D.C., and my special guest on that show will be none other than Larry London, host of Border Crossings on The Voice of America, and that's going to be on August 4th from 13 to 1430 UTC. So do tune in. It's going to be a lot of fun. I'm not going to tell you any more than that, other than the fact that it is coming from Washington, D.C. That's it. So do tune in. It's going to be a hoot. Now, we are going to be taking a short break with our test transmissions. Don't worry. There is a reason for that. Now, when we started the test transmissions back in May, the purpose of them was to collect data. Data meaning how many people still listen to shortwave on a regular basis. So we conducted a week of four tests, but there was such a response from it that we kept extending it, and we kept extending it, and we kept extending it. Now, we are going to pause it for only 3 weeks. So, on August 11th, 18th, and 25th, there is no Happy Station transmission on these three dates. We are going to return September 1st. That's right, September 1st at 1330 UTC on the same frequency, 11835. So you can have a short break of listening to me for a bit. No, but we are going to return on September the 1st. And I'm not going to tell you what that program is. I'm going to keep it as a bit of a surprise. You'll have to tune in and find out for yourself. There are many people right now I know that have contacted me through listening to the show that we do for our partner stations, the one that you're listening to right now, which is aired on FM and medium wave stations around the world, in places like in Kenya, South Africa, Australia, New Zealand, the United States, Canada, the Netherlands, the United Kingdom, Japan, Indonesia, Singapore, Philippines, Russia, which we just started recently, Latin America, and other places as well. Too many to completely go into the list right now. But some people have been writing in asking me, the shows that we do to Southeast and East Asia, are they different? The first answer to that question is yes, they're very different. And the second question is, where can they hear the show? Because, as you're probably aware, we're not making these shows available online as of yet. We're not making them available online as of yet. So there were two editions that you're hearing, but you're only hearing one of them right now. And the other one you can only hear Sundays from 1330 to 1430 UTC on 11,835 kilohertz. There is a way that you can tune into them on shortwave, no matter where you are. There's a fantastic website called Global Tuners. I'm not quite sure where they're based. I think they could be based in Europe. And the first great thing, of course, it's free. It's free to sign up. And it's free to have access to the whole website. You just have to sign up and it's free. The next great thing about it is that no matter where you are in the world, you can tune in to various different shortwave receivers. I think they have something like maybe more than 50 shortwave receivers scattered all around the world. And, of course, which means you can listen to broadcasts let's say you're living in the United States right now, in Texas, right? And you want to hear shortwave transmissions targeting East Asia or the Pacific. or Southeast Asia or Europe, you just go to this website and you get a receiver that pops up on your screen. And you tune it like you would an ordinary radio. And then you can hear what's being broadcast to that area on shortwave. Fantastic site. And I know that a number of people who have sent in reception reports for our transmissions have been listening that way. So do go and check it out. The website is globaltuners.com. That's globaltuners.com. Now, just a quick, a few program notes for this week and next week. This week, as I should mention to you right now, I'm actually on holiday. I am in Singapore, and then I'm heading to Bangladesh for a few days. So next week's show is going to be an encore presentation of an interview that we did more than 2 years ago of legendary British singer Helen Shapiro. Media Network Plus as well. What do we have on it? I can't remember. I don't know the reason why I can't remember, because we haven't recorded the show yet. So I'm actually on vacation. But if you write in during this period for the next 2 weeks, don't worry, I will be responding to email. May take some time because I'm trying not to. I don't know how many of you do this, but I know for myself, I always say, well, I'm going on vacation and I'm going to try not to check my email. I don't want to have anything work-related during my time off. But every so often, maybe at 3 o'clock in the morning, you can't sleep, you get up, you turn your laptop on, and then you start responding to emails. You go, oh, headache just came in, you know. So I'm going to try not to, but don't worry. When I get back, of course, I'll be responding to all of them as well. All right, now time for more music. We're going to listen to Desi Arnaz. And since it is my holiday coming up, I thought I'd dedicate this song to myself and to other people going on holiday right now. Holiday in Havana.
Holiday.
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 Holiday in Havana. The thrill of romance. While you dance with a lovely cubana. Holiday,
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 holiday.
Hear the music of Carnival Day. Dance your cares away, that's the cue and way. It's the finest holiday.
Holiday, holiday, holiday in Havana. The thrill of romance while you dance with a lovely cubana. Holiday, holiday, hear the music of Carnival Day. Dance your cares away, that's the Cuban way. It's Havana's holiday.
Desi Arnaz, Holiday in Havana. Well, I'm going to leave you right now. If you want to get in touch with us, our email address is hs@pcjmedia.com. And just a reminder, of course, our website, www.pcjmedia.com, where you can listen to this program as well as other programs from PCJ Radio International. We're going to leave you today with a little bit of UB40 and Red Red Wine. So until next time, so long. Au revoir, au wiedersehen, adios amigos, and sayonara.
Steering.